Richard of Bordeaux and Henry of Bolingbroke were first cousins, born in 1367, just 3 months apart. They were 10 years old when Richard became King of England. They were 32 when, in 1399, Henry overthrew him to become king in his place. It was a shocking and intensely dangerous moment. The authority of the crown, contemporaries believed, was instituted by God to rule the kingdom and its people. England's sovereign was required to be both a warrior and a judge to protect the realm from external attack and internal anarchy. To depose the king, therefore, was to risk everything, worldly security and immortal soul, by challenging the order of God's creation. Such devastatingly radical action could never be justified unless kingship became tyranny, rule by arbitrary will rather than law, threatening the interests of kingdom and people instead of defending them. Even then, could anyone but God rightfully remove a sovereign he had anointed? Before Richard and Henry were born, that question had been answered in the affirmative only once in England in the 300 years since their ancestor William the Conqueror won his crown on the battlefield at Hastings. During the early decades of the 14th century, their great-grandfather, Edward II, had prioritised his favourites over the needs of his kingdom so consistently, to such appalling effect, that he undermined the rule of his own law. His wife led the resistance that in 1327 put his son on the throne in his place. But Richard's deposition in 1399 was the first in which the crown did not pass to an unequivocally legitimate heir. Richard had birthright on his side and a profound belief in his own God-given majesty. Beyond that, he lacked all qualities of leadership. Henry had everything Richard lacked, all the qualities of a sovereign, bar one, birthright. A king who was a tyrant was replaced by a king who was a usurper. In his attempt to preserve the kingdom, Henry had to undo the sacred authority of the crown and then try somehow to reconstruct it in his own image. Richard and Henry are best known now through Shakespeare's history plays. Richard II and Henry IV Parts 1 and 2, from which the chapter titles of this book are taken, span the years from 1398 to 1413. Shakespeare himself billed Richard II as a tragedy. Containing some of his most hauntingly beautiful poetry, it forms a compelling psychological study of Richard as both sovereign and man. Most of the action, the course of historical events, happens offstage. The central drama lies instead in the play of the king's thoughts and emotions, the dismantling of his self as he is stripped of his power, then his crown, and finally his life. Richard's cousin is his nemesis, but Shakespeare offers no access into Henry's mind. We see only the weight of the choices that confront him, and the tough pragmatism of a politician and soldier seeking to save himself and the kingdom from tyranny. It's Richard who thinks out loud, who speaks truth to this new power, and has to face what it might mean to be a king unmade. This disequilibrium, with Richard at the tragic heart of the narrative, Henry as the means of his fall, continues in different form in the plays that bear Henry's name. There, a figure scarcely recognisable as the dynamic Bolingbroke of Richard II has taken the throne as a grey man, worn almost into anonymity by rebellion and illness, who cedes centre stage to his son, Prince Hal, the future King Henry V, and Hal's largely fictional friend, Falstaff. When the plays were written in the second half of the 1590s, almost exactly 200 years after the moment at which Richard II opens, their contemporary relevance was immediate and controversial. The great historical cycle which they completed, alongside the three parts of Henry VI and Richard III, produced earlier in the decade, frames Richard's deposition and Henry's usurpation as the original sin for which England's punishment would be the darkness of civil war, a bloody conflict between the houses of Lancaster and York that ended only with the coming of the Tudors. In that reading, the ageing Queen Elizabeth, by then in her 60s, embodied England's resurrection, its triumphant return to peace and prosperity. But the tragedy of King Richard II also sets out the justification for Richard's fall, its necessity, given the damage he was inflicting on his kingdom, and in the end, its inevitability.